Hernias of the abdominal wall are one of the most common reasons for seeing a general surgeon. And while they might not seem as exciting as other pathology you'll see on a general surgery service, once you understand more about them, they become a fascinating topic. Hernias can present at any age, pediatric to geriatric. They can present as a benign incidental finding or a dramatic life-threatening condition. In this podcast, we'll discuss what a hernia is, the risk factors for developing them, where they are commonly found, and some key points of hernia anatomy. We'll also discuss the possible complications of hernias and the approach to treatment. Welcome to Surgery 101. An abdominal wall hernia can be defined as a protrusion of intra-abdominal contents through a defect in the fascia of the abdominal wall. Hernias can be congenital or acquired. Risk factors for the development of hernias include male gender, older age, obesity, and any cause of increased intra-abdominal pressure, including chronic constipation, repeated heavy lifting, ascites, or pregnancy. The most common hernias are groin hernias. Included in this group are the inguinal hernias, which may be either direct or indirect, and femoral hernias. The other major group of hernias is referred to as ventral hernias. Incisional, umbilical, and epigastric hernias are included in this group. Groin hernias involve some fairly complex anatomy. However, it's still possible to discuss them in simplified terms and understand them. Three anatomic structures need to be understood: the inguinal canal, Hasselbach's triangle, and the femoral canal. Direct and indirect inguinal hernias involve the inguinal canal and Hasselbach's triangle. The inguinal canal is a short canal with an internal and external ring. Its purpose is to convey the spermatic cord in men and the round ligament in women from an intra to extra-abdominal position. The canal has a roof, a floor, and an anterior and posterior wall. The roof is formed by the lowermost arching fibers of the internal oblique and transversus abdominis muscles. The floor is formed by the inguinal ligament. The anterior wall is formed by the external oblique aponeurosis, and the posterior wall is formed by the transversalis fascia. Hasselbach's triangle is in an area of the posterior wall of the inguinal canal. Its borders are the lateral border of the rectus abdominis muscle, the inguinal ligament, and the inferior epigastric vessels. Both the direct and indirect hernias protrude into the inguinal canal. However, direct inguinal hernia sacs lie medial to the inferior epigastric vessels, and indirect inguinal hernia sacs lie lateral to the inferior epigastric vessels. In other words, direct hernia sacs go directly through Hasselbach's triangle, and indirect hernia sacs lie lateral to Hasselbach's triangle. Sometimes, both a direct and indirect hernia is present. These are referred to as pantaloon hernias. An indirect inguinal hernia is essentially a congenital condition, since the hernia sac protrudes through a patent processus vaginalis. They are often found in infants, sometimes bilaterally, with higher incidence in premature babies. Direct hernias, on the other hand, are acquired. Femoral hernias are uncommon hernias. They occur more commonly in women than men. However, the most common hernia in both women and men is the indirect inguinal hernia. The key anatomy to understand in femoral hernias is the femoral canal. This canal conveys the external iliac artery out of the pelvis and down the thigh, at which point it is referred to as the femoral artery. The femoral vein and nerve run along with it. The boundaries of the femoral canal are the inguinal ligament anteriorly, Cooper's ligament, which is essentially the periosteum of the superior pubic ramus, posteriorly, the lacunar ligament medially, and the femoral vein laterally. Femoral hernia sacs protrude through this canal. Thus, one can clinically differentiate femoral hernias from other groin hernias by whether or not the hernia sac is below the inguinal ligament. Incisional hernias form through the sites of previous laparotomy incisions. In addition to the usual risk factors for hernias, high tension closures, chronic steroid use, and wound infections contribute to the formation of incisional hernias. The incidence of incisional hernias from laparotomy incisions can be as high as 10%. Umbilical hernia sacs protrude through the umbilical ring at the linea alba. In infants, They are a very common congenital condition, and the vast majority close spontaneously by age 2. In adults, they are considered to be an acquired condition, brought on by the usual hernia risk factors. Hernias can also be found along the linea alba superior to the umbilicus. These acquired hernias are referred to as epigastric hernias. They are more common in men and tend to be above 5 to 6 centimeters above the umbilicus. They also tend to be fairly small. All hernias can be described as being reducible, incarcerated, or strangulated. A reducible hernia is one whose contents can be pushed back inside the abdomen. A hernia that cannot be reduced is referred to as an incarcerated hernia. An incarcerated hernia may become progressively engorged, first because of obstruction of lymphatic outflow, then because of obstruction of venous outflow. Eventually, the pressure in the hernia sac compromises the inflow of arterial blood, and the herniated tissues begin to die. This is referred to as a strangulated hernia. Hernia sacs with narrow necks are at a greater risk for incarceration and strangulation than large, wide-necked hernias. Strangulated hernias are surgical emergencies. On physical exam, they are differentiated from simple incarcerated hernias by the presence of extreme pain, tenderness, and erythema of the overlying skin. Incarcerated hernias containing small bowel are one of the more common reasons of small bowel obstruction. Patients presenting with a bowel obstruction should be checked for hernias. The presence of an incarcerated hernia in a patient with bowel obstruction is an indication for emergent surgery. The indications for non-emergent hernia repair depend on the hernia type and the patient's condition. In general, inguinal hernias are repaired electively once they are found. The rationale being that hernia repair is a straightforward operation that is better done when the patient is younger and in good physical condition, rather than waiting for further weakening of the abdominal wall with age and running the risk of incarceration and strangulation. Inguinal hernias in infants should always be repaired when they are found. Sometimes in adults, because of a patient's medical comorbidities, advanced age, or personal preference, repair is deferred or not offered. These patients should be educated to watch for signs of incarceration and strangulation. Femoral hernias, with their extremely narrow necks, represent a high risk for complications, and early repair is the recommended course of action. As mentioned, umbilical hernias are a very common finding in infants, and the vast majority will close spontaneously by age 2. If they have not closed by this point, repair can be planned on an elective basis, usually before the child begins to attend kindergarten. Umbilical hernias in adults are sometimes tiny and barely detectable, in which case repair is not necessary. However, if the hernia becomes enlarged and symptomatic, repair should be offered. Epigastric hernias rarely contain intra-abdominal organs. Usually, they contain only preperitoneal fat. However, these hernias can be quite painful because their tiny necks can strangulate the herniated fat. Repair should be offered if the patient is suffering symptoms. Incisional hernias should be repaired when they are discovered. However, once again, the patient's comorbidities need to be considered. In patients that are overweight or have severe comorbid disease, repair can be deferred until the patient's condition is optimized, either by weight loss or by treatment of their other conditions. Not doing so may put the patient at higher risk for a recurrence of the hernia. The technical details of hernia repair are beyond the scope of this podcast. It is enough to know that there are open and laparoscopic approaches to hernia repair, and prosthetic mesh repairs have become the predominant technique rather than tissue repairs. All hernia surgery involves isolating the hernia sac from the surrounding anatomy, assessing the viability of the herniated tissues, if any, in the sac, and reducing the hernia back into the peritoneum. Mesh is then used to close and reinforce the fascial defect through which the hernia occurred. This concludes our discussion of abdominal hernias. There are many other types of hernias and a myriad of eponyms attached to them, but this podcast has covered the most common ones encountered in practice. Key points to remember are: Number 1. A hernia is the abnormal protrusion of an intra-abdominal structure through the abdominal wall via a defect in the fascia. Number 2. Abdominal wall hernias include groin hernias and ventral hernias. Groin hernias include inguinal hernias, both direct and indirect, and femoral hernias. Ventral hernias include incisional, umbilical, and epigastric hernias. Number 3. Hernias may be reducible, meaning that they can be pushed back into the abdomen. Irreducible, meaning that they cannot be pushed back into the abdomen, or strangulated, meaning that the blood supply of the hernia contents has been compromised, eventually leading to necrosis. Number 4. Emergent hernia repair is indicated in strangulated hernias or hernias causing bowel obstruction. Number 5. Most hernias are repaired in an elective fashion when they become symptomatic. Number 6. Open and laparoscopic approaches exist for hernia repair, with most repairs involving the use of synthetic mesh.